Hi, I'm Mark Woods, back with another Page One podcast with Nate Monroe, columnist Nate Monroe. There maybe should be some kind of secret handshake or something.
Yeah, we're co-columnists now.
Welcome. I was thinking this is indeed a Page One podcast. I've been doing this, let's see, I don't know how many years, and for a while we had rules, no columns on Page One, no columns jumping. Nate's first column is on Page One. Like 300 inches. No, I'm exaggerating slightly. I think it can, would it come
for
in?
For some people, it was probably 300 inches.
Yeah. No, I think, but anyway, no, you've come out swinging, that's for sure. Some really, really strong, good stuff. So I guess maybe start off with that first one. How are you, you said this is going to be a joyless slog, this mayoral race. I don't know why you would say such things.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the last couple of weeks have, you know, basically vindicated that view that, you know, the mayor's race, I mean, you know, Lenny Curry, our current mayor, is, you know, not a really kind of feel-good leader. He's someone who basically believes you're with him or you're the complete total enemy who has to be destroyed. And that's how he views Anna Brochet's campaign, the city councilwoman who's challenging his reelection. And, you know, there really hasn't been much. I'm not sure what Anna Brochet's campaign is up to exactly, and maybe we, you know, can talk about that at some point. But you know, her campaign's been really low key right now, you know, and so we've really just had, you know, the mayor raising tremendous amounts of money and going to staged events and standing around with, you know, sycophants who are smiling with him in Twitter pictures, and everyone, you know, around him is being paid, telling him what a great job he's doing and how great everything is. And, you know, that's, it's just, there's no, you know, there's really no true believers in this campaign. It's just people who don't like Lenny and people who are basically paid by Lenny. And that's, you know, pretty much the two sides.
You laid out in that column how you thought this is a different, has been a different mayor than previous ones. Just a more political time, I think. How would you say it has been different than everything that preceded it?
Yeah, and I should say, too, that I don't think this is a view specific to me. I think this is something that's pretty widely believed within the kind of circle of insiders who are either in or interact with city politics. So, you know, we're talking maybe 500 or 1,000 people. Yeah, I mean, previous mayors all kind of governed within this set of expectations that you make a good faith effort to build a consensus around policy ideas and you execute them. And that's, and for that reason, they were to some degree fairly nonpartisan mayors. I mean, you know, it's, for whatever reason, we have partisan elections. So, I mean, it's not like John Delaney and John Payton weren't Republicans and Alvin Brown wasn't a Democrat, but there was a kind of queasiness about just open partisanship, I think, mm-hmm. in the city in the past. And that is just not the case with this guy. We have a very openly partisan mayor. You know, one of the first things he did after he got elected was go to this Florida GOP summit where he talked about how he won despite the attacks from the liberal media in Jacksonville, which is, you know, which is ludicrous. I mean, the paper endorsed him, and, you know, we're the only local media that does endorsements. So, I mean, I don't, you know, it was just bizarre.
Plus, I think every mayor has felt they've been under attack from the TU, and certainly Alvin Brown, I don't think, would say had kid gloves, was treated with kid
gloves.
Yeah,
we sued Alvin Brown. I mean, I can't imagine how Lenny's head would pop if the newspaper actually sued his administration over open records. I mean, we probably should, you know, but yeah, I mean, we've been tough on all mayors. I remember a time when Alvin Brown's campaign thought that that I and my colleague Chris Hong were like shills for the Lenny Curry campaign. It was ridiculous, you know. I mean, it's a joke. They all think that we're out to get him.
Right. So you've, well, I don't, yeah, maybe you want to come back to, so you know, for a long time we kept wondering, assuming there would be a challenger. Last minute, Anna Brochet is the challenger that, you know, there's others, but that's really the only legitimate one. But yeah, what do we make of that?
So far, I don't know. Anna Brochet has always been a little bit of a cipher on the city council, and I think she likes it that way. She was someone who, she is a CPA, you know, and is the managing partner of an accounting firm. And, you know, she was the first Filipino American elected to the city council. And she came into office in 2015 with really a lot of excitement among that bubble of insiders. People were really excited about Anna Brochet and thought, you know, that's the kind of person we should be elevating to, you know, to higher office here. Someone who gives the city a good look. Those people, by and large, who still support Lenny Curry do not believe that of her now. She and the mayor had a falling out when she was the council president over a couple of things, most notably this push to privatize JEA. She thought the mayor's office was handling it poorly and was one of the roadblocks kind of in the way that, you know, ultimately kind of derailed this discussion about maybe privatizing JEA. So she's going to run a campaign. She is a Republican like Lenny, and she is going to run a campaign that has to appeal to Democrats. She just recently hired Scott Arsenault, who was the general counsel for Andrew Gillum's gubernatorial campaign. Certainly a kind of a big hire, but it's yet to be seen what kind of effort she's going to have to make to appeal to Democrats. I'm just not sure what that looks like.
And there's been some people arguing they have the hashtag she votes and that's how her path to victory is. Do you see that the sentiment, do you think that there will be that gender split?
I think there's going to be there has been some messaging already around that. I have no idea whether that's going to be effective or how much they're going to emphasize that. I mean, Anna Brochet, by all kind of traditional means of evaluating a campaign, doesn't really have a campaign right now. I mean, she has a couple of consultants working for her. She's out, you know, she's going to events and she's visiting with people, but I mean, there aren't any, she's not running any TV ads. She's not putting out any mailers, at least any that I'm aware of. And so she's not other than interacting with people herself and maybe some volunteers helping her, I don't know what message or how they're pushing out any message. I mean, there really isn't one right now, except, you know, she's not Lenny Curry.
One thing you jumped into is crime as an issue. Obviously, it was 4 years ago. It was a huge issue when Lenny Curry was able to defeat incumbent Alvin Brown, and crime remains an issue. So I guess start with the question that's been thrown out to some people. Somebody threw it out to you the other day on Twitter. Well, is crime up or down? So what's the answer to that? Do we have a crime wave or not?
Yeah, I mean, the short answer is that crime is basically where it was 4 years ago, which I would not characterize as some sort of emergency. The problem for Lenny Curry is that he characterized that 4 years ago as some sort of a crisis. And so logic follows that it would be a crisis now. The overall crime rate, so stuff that, you know, nonviolent crimes that most people don't care about, you know, petty larceny, as a whole, it is going down. That is part of a decades-long trend, not just in Jacksonville, but around the country. Crime is down everywhere. Mm-hmm. Overall crime was falling while Alvin Brown was the mayor. This was, in fact, a line that Alvin Brown used to defend himself when he was under fire, because what did happen under Alvin Brown's tenure was the violent crime rate ticked up just a few notches near the end of his term. And that was what Lenny Curry relied upon to attack him with. Violent crime is mostly stabilized now. It's maybe just a little bit below what it was 4 years ago. But the murder rate, which is a subset of violent crime, is up and is like unmistakably up from Alvin Brown's tenure. The crime rate under Lenny Curry, I think Alvin Brown's worst year with murders is better than Lenny's best year. And, you know, murder is what we, you know, that's what people tend to care about. That's what leads, you know, headline news when people talk about crime.
Right.
And so, you know, again, is there a crime wave? I would not characterize that. Although this current year is outpacing last year in murders pretty significantly. I think when I looked at this on Friday, we had 17 homicides so far in 2019, and we had about 10 or 11 at this point in 2018. Now, JSO and the city are certainly acting like there is a crime wave. I mean, that's the other kind of head-splitting part about this, is that the mayor wants to argue everything's fine, the city's safe. Oh, but JSO is, we have learned, authorized unlimited overtime for the entire police department as mm-hmm. part of some crime-fighting initiative. And the city council has set up this 46-person task force to work on, you know, solutions to the city's violent crime problem. So if we don't have a crime problem, why is there OT in this task force? Well, you know, we're not satisfied with where we are, but we're totally safe and there's no problem. I mean, it's all, you know, this is all just nonsense.
You're saying you're a little cynical about Operation Safe and Sound.
I'm not cynical at all.
So yes. Some of it said it's Operation Reelection.
Right. Well, I think I called Operation Get Me Reelected was the sheriff and the mayor and the state attorney held a news conference last week that was about this unremarkable series of arrests that had been made months ago about people brandishing guns and rap videos. And they rarely do the three of them hold a news conference like this over some arrests. It was just clearly like a political event, which again is, I think, speaks to the idea that they think there is some at least perception of a crime wave if they're out there holding some dog and pony show over a couple felony arrests.
And beyond that, you wrote one column about the actual statistics, how, you know, it was interesting that the triple shooting at Raines back in, I think it was August, 19-year-old dead, two high schoolers with injuries, that galvanized the start of some of this, but that is not included in our homicide stats?
It's not included in the stats that JSO would give you if you asked them, because JSO would say, not incorrectly, that it happened on Duval County Schools property, and Duval County has its own kind of police department, and they have to report their own crimes to the FBI, and they don't count for JSOs. And so it just illustrates a point, which is that when you start talking about the numbers like this, you know, politicians can play all kinds of games because the reporting rules for how crimes are counted are really goofy, and they don't really align with how like a normal person would think of, you know, if a homicide happens in 2019, it should probably be counted for that year in 2019. That's not always how it works. If it's mm-hmm. solved, you know, you can have prior year arrests count in a current year, and so it's all weird. And so even when we're talking about these numbers, you know, people would be well served to just be a little bit, you know, maybe not cynical is the right word, but, you know, maybe just look for some larger context around those numbers before you buy into them, mm-hmm. hook, line, and sinker.
And the other one you got into some was the death of 7-year-old Tayshaun Gallen last year, that, you know, that was, you talked about things high profile in the news that were going to knock down doors, and what played out with that?
Yeah, so the 7-year-old boy was killed by gunfire in the middle of this drive-by shooting, and it was a huge deal when it happened last year in February, almost a year, you know, exactly a year ago. And, you know, the sheriff and the mayor stood, you know, shoulder to shoulder, and the sheriff talked about how there's someone out there on the streets responsible for the death of a 7-year-old, and we're going to get him. And what happened was several weeks ago, JSO, they have a little database with you know, all the homicides listed, and someone went in JSO and updated Tayshaun's death as a queered justified homicide, and they didn't tell anybody. And a reporter over at First Coast News, our news partner, noticed that and asked JSO about it, and JSO didn't answer, and then did change in the database the classification to an excusable homicide, which is kind of a weird term no one mm-hmm. had ever really heard of. And JSO dithered around for more than a day and didn't say anything about this, or why, you know, how in the world a 7-year-old boy could be killed in crossfire and no one be arrested for it, or even for it to be excusable. Then JSO changed it back to justifiable homicide and explained that the boy's uncle had shot him on accident, returning fire from this drive-by. That still didn't answer why the people who initiated the drive-by shooting could not be charged. In Florida, you do not have to be, you don't actually have to be the person that killed somebody if you were committing a crime that led to the death of somebody. Mm-hmm. So they still didn't explain that. And we had to wait until the end of the week when the state attorney's office issued its disposition statement, its statement explaining why no one would be charged, until we could roughly figure out that the cops just never really were able to determine who was in the car. But the stat, which is the relevant thing here, right, the stat is that this boy's death will be a cleared homicide on the books, a cleared non-murder homicide, which, you know, clearance rates are a big deal for police departments, and on paper, that'll be a good stat. You know, hey, that's our clearance rate, you know, is what it is, and that will look on paper like the process ended neatly. Mm-hmm. And the, you know, even surface level details of that case show that it ended anything but neatly. I mean, it was just, you know, it's a tragedy. And, you know, why his death and the circumstances around it didn't merit a news conference for the sheriff and maybe even the mayor and state attorney to clearly explain what happened, that, you know, that one eludes me.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned task forces, and yeah, I think they're not that you would be cynical, but task forces have given historically reason to be cynical. I think I mentioned it was before you got here that the, you know, parks are something I care about, and they had this, I think it was 2005, great task force with, you know, smart, influential people. They did a really thorough job, a great job of putting together, looking across the country, and here's what other places have done, and here's what we need to do, and then, you know, nothing really became of it. And then you rattled off a bunch of examples since then, why we would be cynical about this task force leading to changes.
Yeah. So, I mean, and so this crime task force, the city council president, Aaron Bowman, formed it. And the catalyst did seem to be this high school shooting over the summer. And again, the cynical mind would say, okay, well, Bowman is an ally of Lenny, and so this is, you know, they're just trying to push the crime issue off until after the elections, because a 46-person task force may well do a good number of things. It will not do anything quickly. And so certainly whatever comes out of this group is not going to happen until after the elections, even if there's a runoff. And but, you know, let's take his word that this is a good faith effort. Okay. And let's take the mayor's word that they support this task force, which is also kind of a stretch, but okay. You know, even assuming those things, I mean, Jacksonville has, you know, just a terrible record of listening to anything a task force has to say that involves real practical solutions. You know, really, you don't need a 46-person task force to tell you what everyone already knows, which is that the city just does not have enough money. I mean, I won't say the city's broke, because we can pay our bills, but that's really some of them, but that's really about it. I mean, we can kind of keep up with a base level of infrastructure needs, and because the overall economy is growing, property values are rising, and that gives us a little bit more money most years, but that's it. I mean, the city just doesn't have anywhere near the revenue it needs to pay for stuff. And, you know, the school system is talking about this right now. I mean, Duval County is a place where developers don't pay impact fees. In a lot of other places in Florida, those impact fees help pay for schools. They don't do that here.
Right.
You know, hell, in Duval County, developers, we pay them to do work. That's usually how it works in downtown. You get cash money if you want to build a Ferris wheel or a Dave and Buster's. You know, we may give you money for that.
Right. You wrote, the city already has a poor record of heeding the advice of task forces and committees. It will be positively deaf and blind to any suggestion that these investments can only come from a tax or fee increase, which I think that kind of summed it up, that often that's the bottom line of these task forces, that, well, if you want to make, we need this, this, and this, and this will cost money, and things kind of, that's where the brakes come on often.
Yeah, I, you know, when Alvin Brown was the mayor, it was, I remember it being a really popular thing for these elected Republicans to talk about how you can, to have nice things, you have to pay for them, and you can't be a great city on the cheap. And they don't talk about that anymore. Hmm. You know, I think back then you would hear that a lot, one, because it's true, but also they just wanted to shame Alvin. You know, Alvin Brown was a Democrat, but he was a very fiscally conservative. He was anti-tax. And I think, you know, in hindsight, a lot of that was just intended to shame Alvin Brown. Hmm. You could say the same things now. I mean, we're never going to, I mean, this city is never going to, you know, really move forward without finding more money. And whether it comes from a tax or fee, or whether the mayor thinks he can sell JEA and get a huge amount of windfall, I mean, it's just going to have to be money from somewhere.
Right. I was going to ask you one last thing. Since you and Chris Hong did the series on the, I think we would, we title it, The River Creeps In.
As the ocean creeps
in. Yeah. I mean, yeah, the river's already here.
Yeah.
This past week, there was a gathering out at the beach of beach mayors and Lenny Curry, and talking about how we're going to do something about climate change and sea level rise. And so what did you make of that?
Just give me a break. I mean, nothing's going to happen. Again, we don't have any money. So even if Lenny was interested in sea level rise, which I question that premise, you know, from the outset, what are we going to do? I mean, this is a problem that's going to cost millions and millions of dollars in resiliency projects. We need the Army Corps to cooperate. We'd probably need, you know, a lot of federal money. And, you know, I don't, there's nothing. The only thing the city's doing right now is forming this study group to look at resiliency issues. And it's only doing that because the state requires everyone to do that. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing they can point to and say, well, we care. We're just checking some box on a regulatory compliance list. That's the only thing that's happening right now.
It does seem like beaches leaders have cared about it, understandably. They're going to be the ones affected probably most dramatically.
Sure.
But what will play out, I don't know. There's other, obviously, other beaches communities that have been more proactive much sooner. But I guess I took that as somewhat encouraging.
Yeah, I mean, the beaches mayors are certainly, they can talk about it all they want. But right. You know, they don't have the money to do anything real. And, you know, again, they're going to need the federal government to help, and they'll probably need the city at large to help. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, the Jaguars owner wants to build this, you know, huge kind of cathedral to his own wealth out at, on the river in downtown, which is an area that floods. And in all of the discussions that we've had about this development, no one has talked about what he's going to be doing to make sure it doesn't all get washed away. I mean, it's, you know, my own personal prediction, they'll probably try to get some kind of weird stormwater mitigation credits to get out of whatever meager work they'd have to do on drainage in the first place, you know? So I could be wrong, but I just, that would follow with past tradition. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I just, you know, it is easy to be cynical about a lot of stuff. And yeah, I mean, sea level rise. I mean, the mayor is a man who praised Donald Trump on the day that he pulled the United States out of the Paris Climate Accords, this non-binding voluntary treaty that was just trying to get a cohesive plan to tackle climate change. And, you know, whatever you may or may not think about climate change, I think that indicates that our mayor doesn't really care about it that much. So I don't know why I'd care about it now, except that it's re-election time.
So you're saying it's easier here. That's the title of, I meant to get in the plug for the, is it daily?
You're doing it every day? It's a daily newsletter. Yeah, 5 days a week, and I do the weekends.
Except when you went down to the Keys, gave you a day off then.
Yeah, an undisclosed location,
yes.
Mark.
That's right. Me.
I actually think Chris had already done that.
Yes, but, I think that's been in print, which will have to be the one of the next podcasts, Chris and his outdoors column.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks for joining me. And let's see, Ron Littlepage used to refer to columnists as the joy givers. And so, yes, you've been giving much joy already.
I hope so. It's really that was what I was told when I got this job.
Yes, yes, that's the job description.
Yeah, an up with people kind of person.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Nate. And yeah, look for his column on Thursdays and Sundays and the newsletter daily. And how do people get the newsletter?
They can sign up for it. We post the newsletter to our website every day, and there's a little link at the bottom that you can sign up for, and it'll theoretically be emailed to you. So hopefully that works.
All right. Thanks, Nate.
Thank you.